Webb, thank you so much for tuning in. Right now it's 7 a.m. here in New York City, back and forth as we go. And thank you so much again for tuning in and keeping radio station WBAI on the air. Coming up next, what's going on with Felipe Luciano.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and get here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me. So you can see,
sister.
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
Good morning, family. It's Felipe Luciano here on WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial. And we are going to be discussing Fiona, what's happening in Puerto Rico and its fury. I call it Puerto Rico and Fiona's fury. It is amazing to me that after all of these years, particularly after Maria, that the island still suffers from a lack of infrastructure. Lines are down. People don't have water. People don't have electricity. How does this happen in 2022? It's unbelievable to me. I love the island, as many of you know. Some of you have traveled there. Some of you love it very much. You may not be Puerto Rican, but you love it very much. And what I see happening is that people get traumatized. Maria was how many years ago? 7 years ago or something like that? It's ridiculous. And I'm going to be talking to a few people about the island. And island hopping. I'm going to, the first gentleman I'm going to speak to is a gentleman named Arturo Masso, who has a self-sufficient farm in Adjuntas, which is the coffee growing region of Puerto Rico. And then we're going to go to Leila Mejia, who was the director of emergency services for Maria, and she's now in charge of a company called BioBuzz. So she's the community services person for BioBuzz. We're going to ask her what that is about. And then finally, we'll talk to Tato Torres in Guayanilla, which is in the southwest. That's the area that got hit very hard in Puerto Rico. So let's start by asking Arturo, what is the current state of Puerto Rico right now? Arturo, ¿cómo está, mi hermano?
Buenos días, Felipe. Happy to be with you, and thank you for the invitation. Felipe, today is a sunny day. It's a beautiful day in Puerto Rico. Storm Fiona is gone. However, 70% of the population is without power. More than 40% are without water. Many of them are without internet and communications. Agriculture have been heavily impacted in the island, and many people in the central part, they are uncommunicated because many of the roads have been compromised with landslides and other problems. So it is the aftermath, Felipe. It is the incapacity of the state to respond to things that will happen again. I mean, storms and hurricanes are part of the Caribbean.
Sure.
It's about the planning and the capacity to rebound. And that's not here in Puerto Rico.
Now, explain to me, Arturo, what is it about our people that doesn't allow them to throw these bums out? The governor was elected. People do not trust him. He is the one who has, well, LUMA, which is the energy grid company, the people who are in charge of the of lights and water and all of that stuff. Why is it that they've been allowed to continue doing this nonsense? Now, remember, Puerto Rico had a government electrical grid that was sold, or that was gotten rid of, and then they decided to put LUMA in. Can you explain what this whole situation, why is LUMA still allowed to make money when people are going through so many changes? They haven't done anything.
Well, you have to recognize that Puerto Rico is a U.S. colony, and policy here is somehow dictated from the U.S. So the public utility was forced to be privatized, not to be sold. It's not like LUMA paid for that and they have invested a single cent. No, no, no. It was given. And the local government and the control fiscal board, they gave them a lot of resources and money, and they told Puerto Rico that privatizing was the solution to the electrical system for the transmission and distribution. And it's not like we need Fiona to compromise the electrical setup of Puerto Rico. They have been in charge, fully in charge for over a year, and we have confronted continuous power outage, not for local areas, I mean for the whole country, for Puerto Rico. Think about this, Felipe. Fiona went through Puerto Rico as a storm. It became a hurricane in front of us. But after, and we had a 100% power outage in Puerto Rico, and still today, 70% without power. That the same storm became a stronger hurricane, went to Dominican Republic, and only 7 to 17% of the people, the power was compromised for that fraction of the population.
It's,
I mean, how could that be?
I don't know. I am aghast. I am frustrated. And for those of us who live here, who have family in Puerto Rico, or who have friends, we stay with our mouths open and our hands clenched. We don't know what to do. You have decided that you were going to get off the grid. You have a place called Casa Pueblo, which got off the grid. You now do solar energy. Tell us what that is about. Talk to us about that.
We have been running with solar power since 1999, and we have promoting ever since energy independence for Puerto Rico, to break the fossil fuel dependency and to use local resources like the sun, the wind, water to power the island. In 2017, we were the only place in town completely running normally, the day after the Hurricane Maria, Category 5 hurricane, and because we were producing power at the point of consumption. So we were able to reopen right away and provide services to the community. People were going there to repower their equipment or for respiratory therapy. And after that point, we decided to transform the energy landscape of Adjuntas, and we have been ever since providing energy independence for critical infrastructure like the fire station, the elderly home, the emergency unit. We have done grocery stores in rural areas for food security. We have done over 100 houses are running, like Casa Pueblo, in order to fulfill energy needs for medical purposes. We have done a power for economic activation in different local businesses. I mean, it can be done. It's doable. We have a solar cinema at the radio station. The transmission tower is running with energy independence. And today, Felipe, we have a movie where the community have been invited to take their kids to Casa Pueblo, and we're going to show a film so we can, in order to regain some normality within the crisis, you need power. And we have that. We're generating power at the point of consumption, and this is what we're promoting for Puerto Rico. And we are in chunks because the government, they're announcing millions and millions of dollars of resources to transform the energy reality of Puerto Rico, and they have failed. And yet, a community from the bottom up is making progress, and you see it have been validated with the consequences of this new storm,
sure.
Fiona, going through Puerto Rico.
Arturo, considering what you've just said, and everyone who comes from Puerto Rico who has visited you has told me you've got to see it to believe it. In the middle of the island, Adjuntas is basically centrally located, yes? Arturo?
Yes, we are up in the mountains.
Up in the mountains.
I missed that part, yes.
Yeah,
in the
and
coffee
what happened? So, in the coffee area, yeah. So now what I'm saying is, considering that they see empirical evidence that you are self-sufficient, that while everyone else is going through changes and looking for means of energy, looking for fossil fuel energy, you are doing well with solar panels. Why hasn't the Adjuntas itself, and why haven't the people in Puerto Rico said, wait a minute, if Arturo Mazo is doing it with Casa Pueblo, why can't we just switch now? Why don't we just get off the grid?
People they do recognize the alternative. Right now, 6% of the energy for residential consumption is being produced already by the people and people's investment. But it's like we have to democratize and help low-income families also do the transition. Casa Pueblo is helping people that are sick, people who are working, hard workers, and people that are burnable. I mean, because they low income, they don't have the means to pay for the installation. But
right.
It should be public policy. I mean,
yes, it should
be accessible to everyone. It should not be Casa Pueblo doing this house and this other. No, that should be the policy to help everyone. And the resources are there. But Felipe, it is that the government, after privatizing, it is a business. It's for profit. As people are producing energy, power at home, is money that Luma is not going to gain. It's not going to get. Because as people are free from Luma, their business profit is reduced. So they don't want to see that happening. It is a battle. We call it the energy insurrection. It's a bottom-up process to free people, to build energy resilience, climate adaptation, and of course, freedom from the exploitation of the fossil fuel economy upon the people of Puerto Rico.
Yes, what makes it worse is that the political infrastructure seems to support the fossil fuel people. It is said that while he was resident commissioner, Pierluisi, your governor, how do you pronounce his last name?
Pierluisi.
Pierluisi was in fact advocating for Luma, advocating for the kind of energy that they were producing or not producing. And that one questions whether or not he's in his own way making money from this. It's profitable for him since he was an advocate for them while he was a resident commissioner. I'm concerned about the collaboration of the energy industry with the political infrastructure of Puerto Rico. Somebody's making money. Somebody's hurting the people. That is, they're making money at the people's expense. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't know about Pierluisi. I know there's a lot of money running around. But you can profit with clean energy sources as well. What I see in Puerto Rico is that, yes, corruption is a big deal, and you see it. You cannot trust none of these politicians. But you know about arrodillados, Felipe. How do you
yes.
say arrodillados? These politicians, they're underneath accepting instructions and I don't know what.
And mandates from the United States, yes.
Instead
of standing up and saying, no, this is our island.
Yes. For the welfare of Puerto Rico.
The number here is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877 for those of you who may want to call and speak to Arturo Mazo. It is important for us to understand that what happens over there is going to happen throughout the Caribbean. Haiti right now is going through hell. It's at this point a failed state. Santo Domingo was spared, basically, or rather the Dominican Republic was spared. But it's going up, this hurricane is going up to the Turks and Caicos, and it's going up to Bermuda, for those of you who have family there. Folks, this is serious. If you don't take climate change seriously at this point, you need to be sedated. You need to be put away, because this is absolutely, absolute proof that we're going through changes in this world. And I'd hate to see this country go through it, but it is. And other countries, and other countries. Do we have any? Go 209-2877, 212-209. The number is 209-2877, 209-2877 to discuss the situation in Puerto Rico. I was thinking about it. I said, well, everybody, all of the other news channels have been doing it. Why should I be going through this again? But the truth is that this has devastated Puerto Rico. At this point, the populace is overwhelmed. They're exhausted. They're in shock, as far as I can see. And it's hard to change when you're used to, when you've been colonized, when you're used to a particular brand of government, a particular way of doing business. Puerto Rico, and I love it. I will always love it. By the way, folks, you should know very clearly that I'm for the independence of Puerto Rico. But I'm not for independence if we're not taking care of business. We've got to take care of business first. Having said that, let's continue. Arturo, one other question before we let you go. How are the people of Adjuntas, the town itself, how are they handling? Do they want to switch to solar power?
You don't have to convince them. I think they know that it works, that it's doable, that it's a bridge, that they're in a better condition on normal days, and that they are better prepared for crises like this. It's a matter of having the resources to help the population to do the transition.
Okay.
But they
all
know,
right. Let's take some calls, Arturo. We have some calls now. 209-2877. 212-209-2877. Hello, you're on the air. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, good morning and greetings to the beloved community. This is Mayat. I'm actually in the grotto. A couple points, and I'll listen over the air. First of all, we need to look at the earlier history under DT, and that very much sounds like a poison, right? Mm-hmm. Where his, I believe it was the Interior Secretary out of Whitefish, Montana, came up with, after Maria, he got to, without bidding or any due process, he got to choose. And he wound up having to resign in disgrace. I don't remember that.
I remember that like it was yesterday.
Yeah. And let me make my second point, beloved brothers, is, and that is, the left, the progressive, they're missing an important piece of this in this respect around climate change. And that is the technology that is in place, whether it's where, in fact, Tesla created an earthquake machine, and I heard a reporter come back from Haiti when they had that big earthquake, and he mentioned, mm-hmm. I forget whether the regular pattern is vertical or horizontal, but he mentioned some big anomalies, and the Southern Command was right there at the time. Additionally, mm-hmm. there's something called HAARP, and it's spelled H-A-A-R-P. I think Earth Pulse with Nick Begich, whose dad was, you know, had one of those mysterious plane crashes against the progressive. I can't remember those.
Why don't you explain what HAARP is? I've heard this theory a lot, that HAARP has created conditions that are harmful to countries, that they can create cloud formations, they can create earthquakes, they can create all kinds of climactic changes. It's hard for me to believe because it's like science fiction. But how true is this?
That's a good question, Felipe. HAARP is a way where they have antennas all over the place, and there's a big site in Alaska and other places. And what they do, they heat up the ionosphere, And you might even want to reach out to, I think he's at Earth Pulse, but Nick Begich, B-E-G-I-C-H, because he's written a book on HAARP, and there's other information. I think there's one book called Weather Wars. You remember when the Chinese, before one of their Olympics that mm-hmm. would be outdoors, when they were approached about, well, what are your concerns around the weather? And their response was, well, we can control the weather.
Wow.
So they, in fact, during September 11th, 01, there was a hurricane that, according to Dr. Judy Wood, who looks at the evidence, where did the towers go? Directed energy could split the earth in half. They held in place a hurricane. So, yes, so that's what's missing. And I'll be following up with an email because I'll help you to try to put some...
Figure this out. I thank you very much, ma'am. Thank you very much for calling. The number here is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Let's take one more call, and then I go back to Arturo and bid him adieu. Let's take another call. Arturo, ¿tú todavía estás ahí?
Sí, aquí estamos.
Okay. Okay, let's get another call. 212-209-2877. Hello, you're on the air. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Yes, good morning, Felipe. This is Manuel calling from East New York.
How you doing, brother?
Yes, okay, brother. I just want to say that people have to remember that all those islands in the Caribbean are basically obsolete. They weren't meant to carry the population load that they're now carrying. They were factories, basically. And what's going on is that this directly ties into what's happening in this country. This is why white nationalism is a product of the U.S. Because what's going to happen is those islands are going to be jettisoned. And all of the
support... Wait a minute. Hold up. Back off a minute. You're saying the islands themselves are going to be let go?
They're letting them go. And then ironically, that's why Dr. Trump, maybe he didn't even think about it, went down and gave out
paper towels.
Paper towels. Because ultimately, that's really what's going to happen. Because it's going to become a financial burden, and people are already thinking that it is. And unless the islands in the Caribbean come together with whatever their resources are and fix their own infrastructure with whatever they can get from the West at this particular point, mm-hmm. it's going to be a done deal. The architecture down there is inferior. It needs to be structured according to either geodesic domes or some type of triangular shape for people to live. It has to be earthquake and wind resistant. There has to be all the resources that are being sent down there. The people themselves have to keep a track on where that and how that money is being spent. Microgrids are going to have to be made. This is not going to end. And every year it's going to get worse and worse. And the West is going to jettison the Caribbean.
You know, I've thought about that, brother. I have thought about that a lot. What if, here we are talking about independence, what if the independence and fighting for it, what if they say, you got your independence, we don't want you anymore, we're spending $9 billion a year in Puerto Rico alone. And by the way, we give more to the United States than it gives to us. That's been proven economically. So I've been thinking the same thing. Puerto Rico would go out of its mind. Of course, it would be forced to depend on itself. And we have brilliant minds in Puerto Rico, brilliant. And yet, out of a population of around 4 million, almost 2.5 million have already left. There's 1,700,000 people in Puerto Rico. That means we're way down in terms of demographics. Arturo, do you have anything to say about this?
Well, I just want to comment. We might have like alternative explanations for earthquakes and hurricanes, but I don't want to switch the attention that the fossil fuel industry is responsible for greenhouse from emissions of gases that are compromising the whole atmosphere.
Mm.
Those are the people to blame. How climate change is fueling storms like the one we just saw. I mean, this is a storm that it was raining 20 inches, 30 inches of rain continuously. How do you feel that? and most of the damage was related to the water. With regard to the U.S. and Puerto Rico, it is true. Like many people have left, but many gringos are coming in with privilege, and they are building hospitals specialized in Dorado for the wealthiest people, and you see the gentrification of Puerto Rico going on. I don't think they are thinking about giving Puerto Rico independence. I think they want a colonial status forever.
Right.
And
yes,
place people from here as much as people, and this is a beautiful island. We go through things like this, and yet today is sunny. Puerto Rico is a beautiful island, and we have people here that are suffering, and others who have been given privilege from the U.S. to recolonize Puerto Rico, and we have to confront that reality as well.
Thank you very much, Arturo. Thank you for speaking with us. God bless you. Take care of yourself. My prayers are with you, my brother. Take care.
Un abrazo fuerte.
All right. All right. Thank you very much for communicating with us. We're going to take a musical break now, and then we're going to be talking to Leila Mejia from BioBus, and we're going to ask her what that is all about. We'll be right back after we listen to the first tune we want to play, which one is it, Michael? Yes, the apropos, Ismael Rivera y Cortijo, Agua que va a caer.
Aguacero de mayo que va a caer. Que va a caer, ya tú vas a ver.
Agua que va a caer.
Mira que el cielo se está nublando.
Agua que va a caer.
Agüita bombón pa' Galileo.
Agua que va a caer.
All right, that's Cortijo y su Combo, one of the most famous groups in Puerto Rican history. They were the ones who popularized Bomba en Plena in Puerto Rico and in the United States and in the world, I would add. Both of them have now passed away. But it's a song that's so appropriate. The title of the song is Water is Gonna Fall, and it certainly is in Puerto Rico. On the phone with me is a dear friend and comrade. Her name is Leila Mejia. And she, forgive me, Leila, I know you're going to get mad at me. But she is she was the director for emergency services for Maria when it hit, and also is in charge of community services now, community education, for something called BioBus. Leila, how are you?
I am well. How are you, Felipe? And good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to ask you, what are you doing? What do you hear coming from the island? That you're here in New York City, but what are the stories that you're hearing about Puerto Rico and the destruction of the infrastructure?
Oh, I'm hearing a lot of information. I'm hearing a lot of damages, a lot of rain. In spite of the 5-year anniversary of Hurricane Maria, now our island is dealing with Fiona. I'm hearing people have lost, you know, because of the flooding, just their homes. The southern part of the island was hit directly. So it's just numerous voices that I'm hearing, and it's more from people on the ground, not as much as the news, because as we know, the news hasn't been giving highlights of the devastation.
Right. What can people do? How can people help?
I will say this, because I think that, you know, a lot of people have a savior mentality.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that the island is resilient. Our people are very resilient, and already because of their experience with Hurricane Maria and realizing that the government failed them, they have already stepped up. There's a lot of groups on the ground, and I strongly encourage folks to support those groups on the ground and don't come to the island to help out. There's groups already organizing and doing the work.
I remember you said this to me last time with Maria. You said that we don't need people to come in with the savior complex. What we need is information, people supporting those groups on the island. I remember the Young Lords made the mistake of going to Puerto Rico thinking that they were going to bring revolution to the island, and I was against it, but I was already out of power. But I'm telling you, they're lucky that they weren't killed by the islanders themselves. The fact is that the most important thing right now is for people to support those groups on the ground. What are those groups? Can you give us some names?
Sure, sure. So I have some groups, and I can always send you that information. We have Mujeres de la Isla Puerto Rico.
Women of the Island in Puerto Rico, okay.
Yes, we have, I'm trying to translate it to English. We have the Taller Salud, if that's how you say it in English. We have Casa Pueblo.
Casa Pueblo, we just spoke to him, yeah.
We have Mi Patria Puerto Rico.
Patria Puerto Rico. Can they get this on the internet? Can they get this online?
They can get this on the internet. They can get this on social media. I can also, you know, send you the names of all these groups who are doing amazing work. And, you know, they're set up in different parts of the island. I strongly encourage folks to do that. Please don't buy food and water. You know, they can get that on the island. If people really want to do something, I've been noticing a lot of fundraisers, there's a need for things that they can't get on the island. And so when I say that, that is like solar phone charges, solar power generators, gas stoves, inflatable mattresses, asthma machines, water filtration. Those are things that is not easily accessible on the island. So if you're looking to fundraise, these are the kind of things that you want to get and then send down to the island. If you are looking to just donate, you know, send money to the groups on the ground, and they could purchase water and food because that is accessible on the island, and we need to help with the recovery of businesses getting support.
There's one thing I wanted to ask you. The last time during Maria, there was so much money spent and so much money unaccounted for. People couldn't figure out, where's the money going? We found out that some of the municipalities, some of the mayors, were actually robbing the money or diverting it for other uses. What is your take on that?
That is completely true. I'm not a strong believer of supporting government or the huger organizations like American Red Cross and FEMA. I have no trust in them. From the work that I've done with people on the ground, it is us, the community. I hope that this is not a replay of Maria, but the reality is that there are so many problems on the island, especially with Luma. I do not know if we're going to see a repeat in as far as the mayor's taking money.
And diverting it for other uses, mainly personal. Leah, I'm sorry. Lila, what is the what is BioBus? Now, you were director of emergency services, and I remember going to that little church in East Harlem and meeting you there. I was so impressed with your courage, with your determination, with your perseverance. You had coats, you had boots, you had sneakers. It was wonderful. And yet we couldn't get a lot of people to come to the church. I don't know what it was, but people just either didn't know or were afraid to come. I don't know what the situation was. Are you finding the same thing happening with this situation, with Fiona?
Absolutely not. You know, I find that, you know, like I said, mentioned earlier, I think because we still remember Maria.
Yeah.
We still have trauma from Maria.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that our community has just stepped up as far as we know now how to do GoFundMes. We know how to go down to the island. We know the groups to reach out to. So it's beautiful to see on social media the many groups who are organizing, supporting, and doing this work. I have yet to hear of folks coming to New York.
Nobody's coming over here. No, that's true. Maria was disgustingly pathetic. People were fleeing. Mm-hmm. I mentioned to Arturo Masso that right now Puerto Rico has a population of 1,700,000+ people. That is ridiculous, of an island that used to have 4 or 5 million people. People are split. They go to Orlando, they go to Texas, they go anywhere they can to get away from the confusion and the madness in Puerto Rico after Maria. 209-2877 is the number for those of you who may want to call. Michael, do we still have callers on online? All right. Lila, what is BioBus? You are director of community education for BioBus. What is BioBus?
So BioBus is a actual bus in which the executive director, Ben, created a science lab in a bus, and the mission is to bring science to black and brown children, hoping to engage children in STEM careers. We partner with the Department of Education. I am the director for the Lower East Side team. And so we make sure that we are going to our schools that are needed. And we also partner with NYCHA, the TA, the Tenant Association leaders, to make sure that children have a very different experience with science. Also so that children know that scientists are not just white males in a coat. I am fortunate that my team is all women of color and they're scientists. And it's just, you know, changing the narrative of what science can be and should be, because everything we do is science related. And it's also very different from my disaster work. I will be very honest, working Hurricane Maria was very tough because of the continuous fails of the city supporting our families. And it just, I needed a different view of work. I remember
you doing. You were exhausted. I couldn't believe that you were working almost 24/7. It was unbelievable. And kudos to you on that. Let's take another call. 209-2877 to ask Lila Mejia, what is going on and what can you do? Caller, you're on the air. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Hola, cariño. Dios te bendiga, te acompañe y te favorezca.
Thank you.
Todo lo que tú haces.
Okay, thank you.
No hace suficiente, dile, tú eres el que no estás en nada. Okay?
Okay. What is your question? What is your question or statement?
Okay. Ya es hora de que las mujeres, los trigueños, los negros, se unan. Porque sinceramente... No se va a poder de ninguna otra manera. No estamos comiendo uno al otro. We're like crabs climbing over each other. You know what I mean, baby?
Yes, okay. I know very well what you mean.
Yes. Oh, somebody's always going to be hungry. Somebody's always going to be tired. Somebody's always going to be hurt. I wonder why. Why would money God speed?
You're suggesting a unity of purpose between cultures, between black and brown cultures? Hello? I guess she got off the air. I think what she was...
Oh,
hello?
Sorry, I thought you were talking to me.
No, Layla. I always say Layla, it's Lila. Lila, what is your suggestion in terms of here, of the peoples, the indigenous peoples here of New York? What is your suggestion?
I didn't hear her question. I'm sorry. It just was really cloudy. I couldn't.
Yeah, it was a little. It was a little muffled. I think what she was saying is, this is always going to happen. There are always going to be poor people. There are always going to be people who are suffering. What can we do to form a base, a cohesive base here in the United States, starting in New York, in order to fight all of this stuff, in order to really get to the nitty gritty of power, because that's what it comes down to: power and money, or money and power. And I think she suggested that we have blacks and Latinos begin to get together and stop this false division so that we can at least access the need, access the goods that we need, access and press the lever buttons of power so that we can implore our government to do more. I think that's what she was saying.
Wow, that's a really, really amazing question. I think that's really tough because I look to the philosophies of the Black Panthers and the Young Lords as far as bringing different tribes, as you would say, together and making sure to fight that effort. But I think currently right now we are so sparse in dealing with the lack of jobs, the lack of proper food, water. That, you know, if you know Jacob Reese tested positive for arsenic.
Oh
water,
my God!
So many different.
And you're right there. You're on the Lower East Side. You saw it.
Exactly,
and it took a week. It took a week for NYCHA to tell the people that the water was laced with arsenic. Took a week.
That is
unbelievable. And we hear so much about Lejeune and Camp Lejeune over in North Carolina and what happened there. And now people have cancer of all types, brain cancer, bladder cancer, liver cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking people, but, you know, the money that you're going to make from it is nothing compared to your health, Lila.
That is correct.
It's unbelievable.
Correct. I think we're dealing with numerous issues. You know, it would be great if we can all support each other, because in one way or another, we are all struggling in this very racist society. I don't think I have the complete answer to that question.
Okay, that's fair. Let's take another caller. 209-2877 212-209-2877. Hello, caller. You're on the air. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York.
Yes, sir.
Well, I have a way to, so that we can all support one another, especially in the mental health area, in the context that unless we become more mentally healthy, the revolution will never come. What I'd like you to do, Ms. Mejia, is to, your BioBus is a non-profit, is that correct?
Yes, we are a nonprofit.
Right. I want you to investigate a platform called Good Shop, founded by the Rambergs. On Good Shop, there is a search engine called Good Search. So if you go to goodshop.com/about, then look at goodsearch.org. Good Search is a search engine powered by Yahoo, in which nonprofits and schools can support one another by getting a penny a search. So, for instance, in the New York City school system, there are 1 million children. 1 million searches, $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds simplistic. However, we could, for instance, on WBAI, which has a page on Good Shop, however, it would take too long to explain to you how to get to that page. However, I can leave my phone number with the engineer, and we can walk through it. What I'm attempting to do is to get people to support one another, especially to save this station, which needs about $400 a day in order to continue. And so what you could do is we could search for one another. And like I said, 1 million searches, $10,000. We could get the solar system and the wave-powered system that Puerto Rico needs without having any capital coming out of our pockets, however, having our minds improved. As to, Felipe, you were talking about HARP earlier.
Yes.
That's high-frequency, active, oral research program, which was started by the military. It has to do with exciting the ionosphere. The other person, if you were interested in that weather thing, is Dean Whittington. I'll attempt to get Michael the information. He has a program on Progressive Radio Network. The idea is that we could help one another simply by changing our behavior. And one of those behaviors is how we conduct search. So rather than using that other G engine as the verb to look for information, let's help ourselves by using Good Search and picking a charity of our choice. Right now we're trying to save BAI, so WBAI, and see how much money we can raise. Currently, BAI has about $1,450 in the account with 124 supporters. So I'll give Michael my information, and if you feel... Contact me if you're able to get the information from about. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you very much. Lila, thank you so much for being with us.
Of course.
I appreciate your work. For those of you who don't know her, remember, it's BioBus. How can people contact you, Lila?
Sure. I'm really accessible on social media. My Instagram is Lila Mejia, LilahMejia. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. Please hit me up in those platforms if you are looking to find out what groups on the ground to donate to or who to follow. And if you're curious about BioBus and having BioBus come to your school, we go to all the boroughs. You know, I would love to receive as many responses because we enjoy working with children, especially our black and brown kids.
Right on. Thank you very much, Lila. Take care of yourself.
All right. Thank you so much, Felipe, for having me. And you be blessed.
It's an honor. You be blessed, too. All right. We're going to take another musical break. This is one by Ray Barreto. This is apropos to hipocresía y falsedad. Barreto, La Hipocresía y la Falsedad. The song talks about hypocrisy and false faces that people have. Falsedad is falseness, just people who don't show who they are. On the phone with me is Tato Torres, an interesting gentleman. Left New York, went to Puerto Rico, and he went to a place called Guayanilla, which is right near where I used to have a home in Guanica. Tato, ¿cómo está usted?
Estamos bien. We're alive.
Now, you got hit hard because Guayanilla is right in the southwest of Puerto Rico. Tell us what, with as much detail as you can, tell us what happened. How did you survive it?
In my case, my family, my community, we learned our lesson from Maria. Mm-hmm. So we were quite prepared, but we did get hit hard. A lot of wind. Thankfully, it wasn't a long-lasting storm. Mm-hmm. But the rain was what caused the most damage. We have a lot of water damage and flooding. But most of the real damage that this storm caused was due to the water, the amount of water and the rain that came with it. The winds, in some cases, in some moments, were bad, but definitely not as bad as they were in Maria. And also, it was a short storm. It wasn't that, you know, it didn't last, you know, over 30 hours like Maria did. So we have a lot of fallen trees, a lot of fallen power lines. Some folks who couldn't prepare lost their homes, or maybe people who had, you know, tin roofs and they were not secured or fastened properly, either because they didn't prepare or they couldn't prepare. They lost their roofs, and some people lost everything they had in their homes. Luckily, in my community, we haven't had any major serious losses of life or any injuries. The storm itself, for those of us that learned from Maria, it's just a part of nature. It's just another reminder. The vulnerability that we have, it precedes the storm and will exist, unfortunately, for a long time, because we're not vulnerable because of nature. We're vulnerable because of the system, because of, you know, the colonial system and the status in which we live. So it's very hard to prepare a community, a nation, a country that lives, you know, under those terms and that psychology, colonial mentality. So this is a storm. You know, we live in the tropics. We live in the Caribbean. This is something that, you know.
How are the lights?
From generations to generations.
Are the lights? Are the lights on? Are the lights on?
No, we don't have electricity yet, or running water where I live. But that's common here even before the storm.
You know, wow.
After Luma, to the privatization of the system, that's just common. You know, it doesn't take a storm for us to be without power for a week.
How do people bathe? How do they take care of their kids?
Those who prepared save water. You know, we have cisterns. We have, you know, water reservoirs. So in our case, and my family and my community, where most of us have cisterns, so we also do, you know, like they say, baño de gato, which is like, you know, just the most essential part. Or some people call them baño polaco, you know.
See,
an extra part to that. So, you know, we manage. We obviously are conscious of how much water we use, so we're not bathing luxuriously. We bathe as we need to. And we use the water as we need to.
So that means there's no watering of the lawns.
This is normal. This is normal. This doesn't take a storm for us to go through this. We go through this monthly, maybe once or twice.
Now, what's amazing to me...
The water and electric situation, yeah.
What's amazing to me is that you were part of a very famous group called Yerba Buena. And you traveled a lot, both here and in Puerto Rico and other places as well. When did you make the decision to go to Puerto Rico? What was it that made you just move?
I left PR when I was a teenager, when I was 13, in 84. Not by will, but because my family, you know, like many families, felt the need to emigrate and to find better opportunities, and were forced to do that and go to New York. I lived in New York for 25 years. But from day one, I always wanted to come back. At some point, it just became, you know, the dream of coming back started looking very unreal. It was like, how do I go back? You know, how do I go back? I'm a New Yorker now. I'm a New Yorker. I'm used to this life. How do I go back? So it was very difficult to make the decision. In my case, unfortunately, both, I lost a younger sibling. My parents had already moved back to the island, and I felt the need. And they were, you know, my parents are aging, and they're not able, you know, they were alone here. So I wasn't married. I didn't have any children then. And I felt like it was my duty to come home. And it was the right opportunity to come home. Yerba Buena was at its peak, actually.
A lot of my members
were actually resentful that I left. But I felt...
Family comes first, Papi.
And I felt once my sister passed, life took a different, you know, reality set in. You know, that we're only here for a short amount of time, and we have to make the best of it. I felt I've done everything I wanted to do in New York.
I
miss New York. I miss the music and the food, but I don't miss anything else.
That's right. Before we go, because we have only a few minutes left, and I thank you for having answered the phone. Tato, you told me that when you first went there as a community activist, you were telling people, why don't we get together and form committees? Why don't we get together and form a defense committee to defend...
In New York, you know, I was from New York, you know, living in the Bronx, living in the Lower East Side, living in the Barrio. You know, I knew that, you know, you need to get together, you need to organize, to deal with whatever issues you have at hand and whatever issues may come later.
But that didn't happen.
I felt like Chicken Little. You know, I felt like people thought I was crazy, that I wanted to have meetings, that I wanted to do a community census. When Maria hit, things changed. Everybody started saying, you know, all of a sudden everything I was preaching became reality for people.
Yes.
And we luckily, that allowed my community to get organized. Then we had the earthquakes reminded us again. We got organized again. Then we have the pandemic, and the COVID pandemic, that kind of set us back because it separated us. It sent everybody home.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, a few months ago, people started feeling the need. I think once you organize a community, people, it's like a congregation. People enjoy the closeness, they enjoy the communion, the communication. So people started missing it. So luckily, right, a couple of months ago, people started sort of feeling that need to get together again, to see each other face to face, to have coffee together, to talk about our problems. So we were able to prepare quite a bit.
But well, it's called fellowship.
These moments that remind us that community is vital.
Well, first of all, let me thank you profusely for having led the charge there, for having been consistent. I want to thank David Galarza for having given me the number. And I had heard about
shout
you, but I had
David.
Never met you. Yeah, shout out to David, definitely.
We met. You may not remember. We met several times.
Okay. I'd like to see you again when I go over there. Que Dios te bendiga, Tato Torres. We admire your warrior tenacity, brother. Que Dios te bendiga. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. Shout out to everybody in New York.
Right on, brother. We're supporting you. About that time, we got to start splitting. Folks, whatever you can do, what is needed is generators, but you got the numbers from Lila Mejia. Please call those numbers up, starting with Casa Pueblo. Get it online and ask them what is needed rather than just going there with a bunch of diapers and not understanding that may not be the priority right now. My name is Felipe Luciano. I'm Puerto Rican. I love my island. I'm a black Puerto Rican. I make that clear so people don't get crazy and think, oh, he can swish his hair around. I don't. My hair don't swish. God bless all of you. Take care of yourselves. Y pa'lante. Here's Sonny Rollins before we leave. With something called Strode Road. Take care of yourselves. We'll see you next Thursday. Bye.
Conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa this Friday, September 23rd at 3 p.m. I'm Johanna Fernandez, and I'll talk to Maria Hinojosa about the adaptation for young readers of her memoir, Once I Was You, Finding My Voice and Passing the Mic. Maria Hinojosa is host of Latino USA, distributed by NPR for 27 years, and by PRX since 2020. On the occasion of Latino History Month, I'll talk to her about Latino culture and politics, and we'll open the phone lines. Tune in to my exclusive interview with Maria Hinojosa, Friday, September 23rd at 3 p.m. See you then.
WBAI, New York. We're at 99.
Tune in to my conversation with Pulitzer Prize.
We're at 99.5 FM and WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. We thank you so much for tuning in, and certainly wonderful to hear Johanna Fernandez, and she'll be with us for this special tomorrow at 3 p.m., made possible by this commercial-free listener-sponsored radio station WBAI, again at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. You can make a contribution in support of this radio station.